Ave and welcome to Emperors of Rome, a podcast about the rulers of the ancient Roman Empire. I'm your host, Matt Smith, and with me as always is Dr. Rhiannon Evans, a lecturer in ancient Mediterranean studies at La Trobe University.
And I need to look up what episode we're up to.
This is episode XLV, In Trajan We Trust. After being coerced by the Praetorian Guard, Emperor Nerva makes a decision on his successor. He looks further afield than Rome and names the respected general Trajan as the person who will take the title of Princeps. Rome generally seems quite happy with this decision. Trajan's a good general, he's got the backing of the army, he respects the Senate. Sure, he's Spanish, but hey, you can't be perfect. I think that 2,000 years later we can safely look back at this time in history and say, hey, good call, Nerva. As Trajan would go on to become one of the most well-regarded emperors the Roman Empire had ever seen. Here's Rhiannon Evans.
Trajan was born around 53 CE, and he's born outside of Italy, which is a big deal. He's the first emperor born outside of Italy, and he's actually born in modern Spain, in a place called Italica, which means it's a municipal town that's been founded by the Romans. It's in the part of Spain, it's quite far south in Spain, in a part called Baetica. Rome's actually divided Spain into several different provinces. So he's born in a part of the world that's been Roman for a long time, but it's not Italy itself. His full name is Marcus Ulpius Traianus. Those of you who listened to our episode on pronunciation will know that perhaps that the I can sometimes turns into a J, but the Romans pronounced it as Y, so Traianus.
Should we be referring to him as Traian?
We should, probably.
Okay.
Or Traianus, but let's not.
Okay.
Italica had been founded very early on in Rome's empire-building process. Basically, it's an area that they got from winning the Punic Wars against the Carthaginians. And so it's founded for the veterans of Publius Cornelius Scipio in 206 BCE. So it's been Roman since then, and that's 250 years before Trajan's born.
So there's a bit of a discussion about whether Trajan was actually Spanish or whether he was from an Italian family that are living in Spain. So where do you weigh in on that? Why is that even a discussion?
In a way, it reflects what's happening to the Roman Empire. Remember, there have been Gauls in the Senate since the time of Claudius, but that was quite controversial at that point. Actually, Trajan is born during the reign of Claudius. There's been a change from that point to a kind of acceptance of provincial Romans. That's what they are. They're provincial Romans. And remember, Seneca, Nero's advisor and teacher, came from Spain as well. And nobody really questioned his Roman credentials. It's always possible that Trajan's family had moved out from Italy relatively recently to Spain. We don't know the exact details of their background. But he's got three names, and that makes him Roman. And by this point, that's the important thing. Can you actually show your credentials on the battlefield? Are you from a Roman family of the right status, high enough up status to make your way in the Roman world? And even that status is to some extent changing, depending on how good you are in terms of military affairs. But Trajan didn't come from a nothing family. His father had been consul. His father also fought in the Jewish War with Vespasian and Titus and had become governor of Syria. All right, so this is something that's possible for provincials by this point, later first century CE. And him becoming emperor is sort of the logical conclusion of this change.
So the period that we're dealing with isn't one that we've got a lot of written records about, do we? We don't have a biography of Trajan written by Suetonius or Tacitus or anything like that, even though they were from around this time. So what exactly do we have?
Yeah, it's the big black hole of biography, Nerva and Trajan. And you're quite right, Suetonius and Tacitus are alive exactly at the time that Trajan is emperor. And that's when they're really starting to write, especially Tacitus. So what we've got are a variety of sources that unfortunately are not that helpful, especially with Trajan's early life. We've got Dio. We've always had Dio Cassius. We should probably remember that it's an epitome. In other words, it's something boiled down, not the whole original version. Although it's still fairly extensive. Not so much for his early life, though, because it's not a biography. It's a history. So it deals with more or less when he came to power rather than what happened in his early life. We have kind of got what is going to from after Trajan become our default biography, which is something called the Augustan History. That starts with Hadrian. It's considered unreliable, even compared to Suetonius. So it's kind of cobbled together, probably written in the 4th century, probably not all by the same person, but it does cover the emperors from Hadrian onwards until quite a late period. That talks a little bit about Trajan because Trajan was the adopted father of Hadrian.
In relation to Hadrian, yeah.
We've also got a speech of praise of Trajan by the younger Pliny, who was consul in 100 CE. But, you know, it's the panegyricus. It's a panegyric. There is nothing bad about Trajan in the world, according to Pliny. Mm. So you really have to wonder how reliable that is.
So basically what we've got is a bunch of aggregated mentions and maybe archaeological evidence and scraps, really.
Yeah, I think Trajan might be the first emperor for whom we have more archaeological evidence, because he made a big footprint on Rome itself, than we do written evidence.
Okay. So what do we know then about the young Trajan, so the pre-emperor Trajan, if anything at all? We know little bits and pieces, so what can you tell me?
We know that he went and joined his father in Syria, his father being governor of Syria, and that he starts his military career there sometime in the 70s, so when he's in his 20s, a young man. And then he seems to at some point have been moved to the Rhine, so really that's the border of the Roman Empire, or just beyond there, and that's one of the potential hotspots. But we really don't know much detail. Something that does come up in Dio is that in 89 CE, he went closer to the Rhine to try to help put down a rebellion against Domitian, which was the uprising of Saturninus. He actually arrived too late. He wasn't involved in that directly. But this is something that's sort of played down by people like Pliny, because they don't want to remind people that he might have been on the side of Domitian, who is now seen as persona non grata. That is one of the small parts of his early military career we know about, and one of the reasons we know he was in that area then. We know that around 86 CE, he becomes responsible for as a guardian, or at least co-guardian, of the children of his cousin. His cousin's called Aelius, and the children are a boy and a girl, and the boy is Hadrian, and he's going to be the next emperor after Trajan. So he's kind of already been taken under the wing of Trajan at this point. Trajan gets married a little bit later, probably in the early 90s, to a woman called Plotina, but they don't have any children together. So that's why Hadrian is kind of groomed to be the next emperor and will be adopted by Trajan eventually.
So after the death of Domitian, Nerva becomes emperor for as long as he's going to last. And due to basically, we'll say, pressure from the Praetorian guards, he names Trajan his successor. He says that I'm going to adopt Trajan. He's going to be the emperor after me. And Rome breathes a sigh of relief. Everybody is, except for the Senate, everybody is pretty much happy with that decision. So why is Trajan a good choice for this?
Because we know so little about Trajan, it's hard to know, except that he's clearly a successful military leader by this point. He had actually been working his way through politics too, because the two often go hand in hand, and he'd been consul in 91 CE. So remember, that's under Domitian. Yeah, another sign that he was actually flourishing under Domitian. Mm. And he was consul at quite a young age. He clearly was able to at least get ahead in terms of senatorial and magisterial positions. But the most important thing is that Nerva saw the writing on the wall and saw that he needed to choose a military leader to succeed him. And of course, Nerva doesn't last very long after that. I mean, it's not much more than a year that he's actually emperor.
So in 98 CE, Nerva dies and Trajan becomes emperor. So how does this news reach Trajan?
Well, apparently the news of Nerva's death came to Trajan as he's out on campaign up on the Rhine via the man who's going to succeed him, from Hadrian himself. So he's sort of sent out as the messenger of the death and of his elevation. Now, I say apparently because it comes from that most unreliable of sources, the Augustan History, although pretty soon we will be relying on the Augustan History for people like Hadrian. People don't necessarily trust that, particularly as it doesn't occur in Dio as well.
So he gets the news that he's the emperor. How does he react?
we get different kinds of responses from different sources. So Dio says, and I quote, he sent for Aelianus and the Praetorians. Okay, Aelianus is the Praetorian prefect. And the Praetorians who had mutinied against Nerva, pretending that he was going to employ them for some purpose. And then he put them out of the way, which is the euphemistic way that Dio says he had them bumped off. He has them executed. So he gets rid of somebody who might be a problem for him.
So those are the people who threaten Nerva.
Yeah. Nerva placated them. Yeah. Trajan just says, you're gone.
Yeah.
So that's quite a ruthless, but I guess effective response to the rise to power, to make sure that you are safe in that power. He doesn't come back to Rome very quickly. So he goes around the Rhine and the frontier on the Danube, which you might read as significant given that later on he is going to invade over the Danube. Maybe he's just scoping that out. But that's kind of well into his reign. And some people might read this as he's very comfortable in terms of his accession to being emperor. He doesn't need to rush back to Rome. Others have said, oh, well, he's making sure that none of the troops mutiny, because that would be dangerous for him if these powerful legions took against him. That's more or less what we get from Dio. From Pliny, and we should never forget that Pliny's writing a panegyric, and it's all good news. Pliny concentrates on his character and how it's reflected in his response to becoming emperor. So he says that Trajan acts in a very humble way, that he is quite reluctant to be emperor. He's already been hailed by his troops as Caesar, as imperator, but he's actually not that keen to take this role, which I would say is probably nonsense. He's been adopted by Nerva. He knows it's going to happen. This sounds like a great trope for Pliny to bring out and say, oh, isn't he such a wonderful, humble man? Look, he's our emperor, but he's one of us as well. And Pliny kind of lays this on with a trowel in all kinds of ways and says, you know, he only agreed to be emperor when he realized there might be mutiny and trouble amongst the troops if he didn't do it, if he didn't calm the situation, if there was chaos, if there was a power vacuum.
How generous of Trajan to take one for the team.
Exactly. Yeah, that he's just doing this for the good of the state, as it were, not for his own power and aggrandization. And he also says, which you could read to a certain extent as true, that Trajan is different from, he says, from all other emperors. Well, that's not true. In terms of coming to power, that he comes to power through peace, not through civil war. So he's really straining it here. He's saying Trajan is a new kind of emperor. You know, he started in peace and that's how he's continuing. Isn't he wonderful? He also says that Trajan is so humble that he acts modestly like one of us, that when he came back into Rome eventually from the provinces as emperor, he doesn't come like the other emperors did on horseback or in carriages. He walks in on foot and he gets mobbed by the people. You know, and that's fine. You know, the way that we love it, if celebrities will actually stop and talk to people as they're going into their premiere or whatever. Well, Trajan sort of does the same thing. He's the emperor of the masses.
Yeah.
The emperor of the people in Pliny's cast of him. And, you know, if you read Pliny, it does become nauseating at times. It's not very long. Basically, Trajan is the perfect man. He is devoted to his wife. I have to say there are little hints elsewhere that he was actually more interested in boys and men than many other emperors. But I think that's something we'll keep for the next Trajan podcast. So he's absolutely devoted to Plotina, but he's also a kind of, you know, good blokesy sort of guy, in that what he likes to do in his leisure time is to go hunting and riding out in the, you know, remote forests around Rome, and that he's very virile and active as an emperor. So perhaps they're really stressing the difference with Nerva, who was fairly elderly when he became emperor. Trajan's relatively young. He's in his 40s. So this combination of humility, acting like a private citizen at the same time that he has all of this power. So much power, in fact, that Pliny says, you know, we thought that we were greeting Jupiter himself, but then we realized it was Trajan and he was just acting like one of us. And isn't that amazing?
What year did Trajan become emperor?
Trajan becomes emperor in 98 on the death of Nerva. And apart from having to kill off the Praetorians, it is violence-free, which it's true. Not everybody managed that kind of transition. And Trajan does immediately say that he is going to work with the Senate, that he is going to take them into account, that he will, you know, be one of them, that clearly tries to present himself as a diplomat. Of course, the Senate would always think, well, lots of emperors have said that. Is this going to be a reality? So with every new emperor, just like with every new boss, there's a certain sense of, you know, what's the vision going to be this time? How are we going to have to modify our behavior, you imagine? But he says that he's going to be this sort of great new force, clearly sets himself up in opposition to Domitian. Apart from the short reign, I think perhaps one of the reasons that people forget about Nerva is that he's not really mentioned. Of course he's deified. Of course he gets a temple built to him. But apart from that, he is just that useful stepping stone between the bad emperor Domitian and the good emperor Trajan. Indeed, as we will see, not just a good emperor, but the best emperor, because that is what he has written on his coins eventually. Optimus Princeps, the best emperor.
That's Dr. Rhiannon Evans, lecturer in Ancient Mediterranean Studies at La Trobe University, and you've been listening to Emperors of Rome. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Please leave a review there. Trust me, I read every one of them. And reviews help our ratings, which helps. And reviews help our rankings, which helps other people find this podcast. You can like the Emperors of Rome on Facebook, and there is quite a lot of you lovely people on there now. And you can follow both myself and Rhiannon on Twitter. Rhiannon is at Dr. Rhiannon Evans, and I'm at Nightlight Guy. In the next episode of Emperors of Rome, we'll see Trajan go head-to-head with the Dacians. What's that, I hear you say? You've never heard of Dacia? Well, once Trajan is done with them, let's just say that there's a reason for that. But until then, I'm Matt Smith, you've been fantastic, and thanks for listening.